right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Dania, and it's been a while since we did a computer show. We had a couple of interruptions over with sports, and we ended up doing a couple extended business shows, but we haven't got to talk about tech or computers, and it's a really exciting time to be in tech. And we expand that, and not just about computers, but we also talk about things like space and what's happening at NASA, SpaceX, Blue Origin, all of these different technical races that we have going around the marketplace. So this show's been going on for a ton of years, and our goal is to take this demographic, the listenership in this group, and setting sort of like a stage where you have a phone line that you can call me on and ask questions. You have text messages that you can text me on and ask questions. And sort of we all get to learn about stuff that might be beyond our capability. So everybody tells me when I meet them in public is that they're a self-described neophyte. They don't know about this tech thing, and it's a little intimidating, and they don't like it. They want to swear it off, but they see that it's necessary in everyday life because it's happening that way. And if you can't really swear it off, I watched someone try to keep a flip phone for as long as they possibly could, and they didn't want to get a smartphone. And then eventually that person got a smartphone. And so when we first, one of the first shows that we did, I kind of pictured this audience, and then one of the first guys that I talked to said that he hates it, he doesn't want to do it, but if he's going to do it, he's going to lay it in my lap. And it was a challenge because I'm not a patient person, and yet teaching this stuff and being there for you in a way, I had to develop a sort of patience and a language and a strategy that make it so that, like everybody else in my field, we all wanted to use acronyms and big words and talk over your head, and it was annoying, right? And I hate it when I'm in a different industry and I don't understand it and people are talking like that, because you can't learn when the shortcut languages are being used, right? So we talk about it nice, open, in the public, so you can overhear it, ask questions about things you don't understand, and you can not be intimidated by it. Because if you're not intimidated by it, maybe you'll play with it a little bit, and eventually you will learn, and you won't even have to try to learn. It'll just, like, is osmosis. It'll get sucked into your brain, and you'll have be able to refer to things that you've heard me talk about and the terms and terminology that I used when I was talking about it. And you get to slow me down and have me explain something if I go over it too fast or you need more explanation. So that's really your goal out there. Here's the number one theme for today that I want to go over. And it's going to require a lot of you call me up and share some experiences with me. Now, I shared with you that I cut the cable a long time ago. I didn't want to pay cable, regular traditional antenna. I didn't want to pay for a traditional cable to come into my house. Pretty much all the content that's available is coming through streaming on our phones, on our tablets, and whatever. And that's really what I went after. So I basically got really good internet. I got really good infrastructure. And then I stream pretty much everything that I watch. And I've really not had to do anything. I haven't missed any programming that you've watched, Super Bowls and big events and whatever. I've gotten a copy of it somehow. It might not have been when you watched it, right? But eventually I got to see it with the things that I recorded and streamed and stuff like that. So it's 100%. I've not had to do away with anything. But here's my deal. Some of you in this audience are a little bit older. And some of you, when you get in the car, you use the AM/FM radio. You go home and there's a television and you click the buttons. Some of it is just hard to get onto your TV, right? So where, my favorite way to play with this is I put Chromecasts on all of my TVs. Chromecasts are just a dumb device, right? All of the intelligent things that's happening is happening on your phone and your tablet. A Chromecast just allows me to know if I'm watching a show on my phone, I can throw it up to my TV, watch it on the TV, and turn my phone off, right? So it's a way to get what you're watching on your phone on your TV. And so what I want to do, what I want to ask you is I want you to tell me about your setups. And if I can set something up to get content, streamed content, whether or not it's someplace through Netflix or YouTube TV, if I can get it onto your TV, what would you accept? Because this is what I have planned. I basically bought every device under $100, and I've been playing with different software, different methods to try to figure out how to get somebody who just got started in this to be able to bring something up on their smartphone, because I'm assuming that most people have at least a smartphone that's capable of bringing up web content. And then at the very least, being able to bring up some kind of YouTube video, some kind of Facebook video, some type of streaming service, and then cast it onto the TV, because a lot of you don't want to watch a show on your phone. Don't want to watch a show on, we got this big TV in our living room. We want to watch it on our TV. So call me and text me and let me know what you would be willing to endure. Or if you wouldn't be willing to endure at all. It's either got to come in over the TV or not at all. Because you can go two ways. You can either put something like a Apple TV or a Fire Stick and then learn the controls and learn how to get to all of that stuff. Like when you want to watch Netflix, you have to go on your Fire Stick and open the Netflix app and then have Netflix go to the show that you want to watch. If you want to do YouTube TV, you got to go to the YouTube TV app and you got to dig down through and find the channels that you want. If you want to watch something on YouTube, you got to get your Fire Stick and then go to the YouTube TV or I'm sorry, YouTube app and search for the YouTube. And while it's not difficult, it's different than being able to pull out one remote control and just go through the channels that you want to watch. And a lot of times people throw their hands up and say, this is stupid. It was so much easier before. And so I want to bridge the gap between the unwilling in this era and the, you know, I'm telling you that the next generation, they don't even think about it. They just know where to go to get stuff and they throw it up on the TV and they make it look super simple just because they've done it a billion times. That's really the difference, is somebody's got to show you how to do it. And you just got to do it a billion times until it becomes part of your nature. And instead of getting frustrated, throwing your hands up, I want to be someone who can help you construct this together so that we can get you using the stuff that the rest of us are. Eventually, there might not be cable television. It might not be distributed the same way that it is. And I'm not even saying, you know, that the threat of that is what should make you go and do something different. There's just some media that you don't have access to, and it's not getting to you because the way that you're consuming this stuff. And rather than just having people like me complain about it, I want to solve it. So we put a couple of products up on our Youngstown Computer page, and I'm calling it the watch package. And I would like to include some hardware in there that somebody from Youngstown Computer could show up. We can put some stuff into your network, show you how to get stuff from, you know, your television. I want to use my model because I think I've pretty much used the buffet of all of the tech that goes into this, and this is my favorite. Because you don't have to worry about programming all of your stuff into all of your TVs and passwords and typing with the remote. You're already doing that with your phone. So if that stuff is primarily on your phone, your tablet already, just let that be your remote control. And you know how to get to it on the phone, and then make the TV just an extension, like a display that can connect to it. That makes the most sense to me as something that you'd be willing to do. But you'd have to know how to bring the same four apps that I just mentioned onto your smartphone, so that then you could take your smartphone and cast them out to your television. Really, all of that sounds super easy, but there's one hitch and complication, is that some of your stuff is going to be on a rival or a competing product. So, like, if you can bring up like Netflix, for instance, or Prime Videos, for instance, those things are pretty easy to send out to your Chromecast. But if you bring up something in the Apple environment, well, that's not going to send to your Chromecast. That has to be sent to your Apple TV. And that's where I lose most of you and say, screw this, give me my remote control. And, you know, put this other crap on the curb because I'm not dealing with it. Because I think, we are still pretty much in our infancy here. And so it will get better and it will be more standardized. And I think that it will consolidate a little bit where, you know, I don't necessarily think that there'll be much. I think everything around you besides your phone is going to be a dumb terminal. I think your computers are just going to be dumb terminals, displays for your phone. You put the little docking thing and you just do your thing from your phone or your tablet. I think the TV, same thing. It's not going to really connect into anything, just to be a way of displaying something off of your phone. Anybody walks in the room, brings their own programming. And I think that's just what we're going to end up with here. But until then, it's kind of clumsy because there's like so many different environments that you've got to accommodate for. So if I were to take an older group that maybe is coming from a cable environment, that if you would do something like, your most one-for-one is going to be YouTube TV, because it's basically the same programming that's available, especially in this area with Armstrong Cable and with Spectrum. You have the same channels, you have the same pricing plans, it's almost the same. And you have DVR and stuff like that, but you'd have to you'd have to warm up to that and maybe download a preview on your iPhone first or your Android phone first, and then watch a couple of things on your phone and say, okay, this is cool. I got my episodes on my phone, but I really want it up there on the TV. Now, with YouTube TV, you can very easily send that stuff from your phone up to the TV if you have something like a Chromecast. So again, I want to hear from you. I want you to tell me what you have, what you're willing to do. If you just feel like, you know, scrap this is too difficult. But there's some stuff, even we're creating our content, that there's a couple of you that can't figure out how to get to it. And I know you've given up by this point. So I want to try to invent some stuff that makes it easy. Our easiest thing was that we basically took some of our YouTube content. We dropped it in an embedded player on a website. And if you go to that website, it just plays. So you don't have to do anything. You bring up a browser on your phone. You can watch the content and whatever. But you get into a two-hour show, and there aren't many of you who want to sit there with phone in hand and watch a two-hour show. If you're able to send it up to the TV, that's a different story. But 15 minutes, maybe. 2 hours, no way. Nobody's sitting there in front of their phone. Now, tablet, maybe. If you put it up on a kickstand, you could put it on the, you know, the edge of the bed or the nightstand or whatever, and you might be able to watch it. But again, it's still very clumsy and not something that I would recommend, you know, people do. I don't know how comfortable you are sitting in front of your computer for 2 hours watching something. I don't know if you would even do it. I do it as sort of like in the background stuff. So I got two monitors at my desk. The right screen is playing something like CNBC or the news or something like that. And while I'm working on stuff, checking email and whatever, it's happening on the peripheral to the right of whatever I'm looking at. So I'm not really watching it, but I sort of am. It's close enough to me that if I peeked over there, I could see it. But I'm more or less listening to what's going on. So 330-729-9977. You can text me at 333-1570. I really want to hear from you, because the stuff that I get back from you is going to kind of help me to find what eventual product that I'm going to put in place to help you guys get stuff on your TV that right now you can only get from your phones and your computers. And I've got a couple of things that are arriving today, an Android device and a Chromecast that I have some software that I'm going to try out to see if I could even make it easier than it is right now. But I have this person I'm in my mind, and they basically criticize everything that I do here. And I hear the criticisms about it being more difficult, or why am I doing this? It's extra expense for no reason. And it's hard to justify beyond that if it is worth it. I mean, in my mind, it turned out as an experiment where I was just sick of paying $200 for a bunch of channels that I didn't watch. Maybe your $200 means that it's kept easier and that's good enough for you. But anyway, I want to hear from you. 330-729-9977. I have a whole slew of new training topics that we're going to be bringing over to Youngstown Computer in the coming weeks. So I want to introduce that. Those of you who have taken residential services, I have met and got to know Rich over the last year. Rich is a good dude. And I want to tell you, the residential services, I guess, residential services were more interrupted than commercial services. So he's taken a lot on the chin over the last year as he's set up safety mechanisms and kept everybody as clean, as safe as he possibly could. And so we want to do the best that we can to drill in some help and get some business going on his side. He's still kind of tethered to the office. And if those of you who know our model over the period of the last couple of years, we were best when we were coming to you and going into the field, so that, you know, we've had to rewrite the model to accommodate what happened with COVID. And I guess we're not done with that yet. We're still inventing. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Bob. Bob, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Good afternoon, Joe. Hey,
hi.
This thing you're talking about with Chromecast.
Yeah.
How does that affect our data usage if we choose to use our cell phone?
It doesn't any better, any worse. I'm sorry, I'm losing headset here. It's no better, no worse than the data that you'd be bringing down from the television. So streaming sort of has like a bandwidth rate, and it ends up being around 4 gigs per hour of data. So if you have Spectrum or you have Armstrong,
Usually the regular tier is plenty for watching television without going beyond their caps. Now, if you are on like data, like the cellular data, it could consume that pretty good because it does use more than the 50 gigs or the 10 gigs that you get per month.
Okay, well, the problem that I'm facing is I use my, I have an iPhone, as does my wife, and I use mine every single day to run my business. And right now I'm usually consuming somewhere around 20 gigs a month, which is right at the very top end of my current billing. And if I would start using my phone to do this Chromecast that you're suggesting, I would then be eliminating Dish Network, which is my outsource for, watching TV for the wife and I. And I'm just concerned that the data usage, from 6 o'clock till 10:30 at night, would just go up near 100 gigs, a month.
Right. Hey, Bob, can you hang tight real quick? I'm going to take a quick break, and I want to answer this question for you. Can you hang tight?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to answer that question about Wi-Fi and talk about that next. So this is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. Hang tight. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm going to go back to Bob here. Bob was talking about doing what we were suggesting about doing the streaming to the Chromecast and was concerned about the level of data usage that might happen if they were to do that. Bob, are you back with me? Bob, are you there?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. So my question to you is, in the house, do you have Wi-Fi set up already?
Yes, we have. I have hardwired, and I also use Wi-Fi.
Beautiful. So basically, you're going to have the Chromecast and the phone switch over to Wi-Fi while you're doing streaming, and it won't use any of your data whatsoever while it's streaming out to the Chromecast device. So that's actually beautiful because it will basically preserve all of your data.
Okay, you're about 3 pay scales above what I understand.
Okay.
Just
so when you say that you have a 20 gig data cap, are you talking about on the cellular data or your home data cap?
Cellular.
Perfect. Okay.
We're with CenturyLink currently, and we don't have any data cap on that. We just pay a flat fee for the access to the internet through the home.
Okay,
and
that
then we also use Dish Network to watch TV.
Okay, that's perfect. So what you're going to do is you're going to have the phone connect to your Wi-Fi. So if it's off the cellular network and it's now on the wireless network, you're no longer going to use your AT&T or your cellular data. You're going to be just on your home's Wi-Fi data. Now, when you install the Chromecast, it's going to connect to your phone first, and then your phone is going to tell it how to get onto your wireless network, and then the Chromecast will also be using your Wi-Fi. It won't be touching anything on the data side. So if you've got no caps on your home Wi-Fi, you're going to be good because you can stream that stuff directly from your phone.
And therefore, over some period of time, we can actually wean ourselves off of, like, Dish Network and just use the Wi-Fi in the house. And the Chromecast then becomes our connection instead of using Dish Network. Is that
That's
correct?
Exactly right. So if you're and I would play around with it first because you can get YouTube TV for I think it's a trial for 30 days, right? So see if you can get your programming, see if you can get all of your shows on the phone, and as soon as you know that it can cover it, then yes, you can start weaning completely off of Dish Network.
Wow, that sounds exciting because that would be saving us almost $100 a month.
There you go. It's the same reason I did it. And the more you deconstruct those distribution models, the more content becomes available independently.
Now, another thing, just for you, so you understand how I've got my system set up, I'm using a Roku box or whatever you call it, like a Kodi box.
Yeah.
And I've been downloading APKs through that and getting, current movies. I can watch yesterday's TV broadcast if I want to. And all of that, of course, is free now that I own the box.
Right.
But like you were saying earlier, it's a little bit laborious trying to figure out which one of those APKs I want to tap into to watch the best movies or the best live TV and so forth. But you're saying if I go the Chromecast way, I can actually set that box away and just use the phones and set everything up through my telephone.
That's it. I would say 90% of the TVs that I use all have Chromecast, and I bring all the important stuff down to the phone, and then I just push it out to the TV.
Now, the question I would have, my wife, like your wife probably, watches, I'm trying to think right now, Lifetime movies,
yeah,
things like that, family-friendly movies, and I'm a car guy, and I also like to fix things, so I like to watch Home and Garden television on a different TV. And I'm assuming, would we both use our phones separately?
Yeah, she would bring up the content into her phone, and then you would bring the content into your phone, and then as you move around, you can throw it to different TVs.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's a beautiful
Any
thing.
Any chance that you would put something like this together in like a PDF form?
Yeah,
that you could,
yeah, if you check out Youngstown Studio, I'm actually putting together some tutorials about how exactly to do this. So we're going to put a package that you can buy together, and at the same time, we're going to assemble all the stuff we use in our package. So if you want to do that at home, you can go right through our steps.
Sounds like a real winner there, Youngstown.
Youngstown Studio.
Studio. Okay.
That's
Joe,
it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help today. You have a great afternoon.
You do the same. It was great talking with you, and I'm glad you're out there. And, you know, this has been – we've been on this trail every bit of 4 years when we started seeing if cutting the cable was even a thing, if it was doable. Early on, I had to, like, subscribe to 3 different streaming channels to get everything I needed. I had to have an antenna, a digital antenna, to get everything. And it was a little bit of a pain in the butt. I thought, nobody is going to do this. I mean, it's, while, yes, technically it's possible, nobody's going to be like, okay, I want to watch X show. Which one of my products has X show? It was just too difficult to manage. And so eventually the services got a little bit better. I would say most of it is training myself to know where to go to get to my stuff. I know what's on Netflix now. I know what's on Amazon Prime now. I know what's on YouTube TV. I know the stuff that are, you know, where to get the movies. But it took a while to get used to it. After, you know, the cable companies, I have nothing against cable companies, satellite TV companies. And so, you know, this is not an attempt to bail on those, right? We did it as an experiment because the costs were in line. I barely watched any TV. When you divided the shows that I watched by the price that I was paying like $10 a show. And it was crazy because I just didn't watch enough TV to justify it. If you watch a ton of TV and you want it to be easy, then that cable box is probably plenty for you. But there's got to be a strategy behind your desire to do this, because it is a learning curve. And again, there's a lot of you saying, you know, I don't need all that other stuff. I'll just, you know, have my little clicker and I'll click through 30 channels a night and I'll find, you know, complete happiness in what I have. 330-729-9977 is the phone number. Terry had left me a message here on Facebook. I'm going to read that one as it were a text message. And I have 2 text messages to read when we come back, and I'll respond to those and tell the stories there. This is a cool topic. Everybody loves this one. But I still do want to hear from you. I want you to tell me about what you have, not necessarily to the point where that you're ready to do this, but I want to hear some people that maybe that you feel that there's some challenges in what they have. Maybe you got an old CRTV or digital cable box or something like that. Well, call me. 330-729-9977. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer and host of this program for the last, I don't know, more than 10 years. We've been trying to give you a place to talk about this stuff and learn about this stuff the most unintimidating way that we could imagine. I don't want people to think that this is hard, and a lot of us come across as it being harder than it needs to be. And I wanted to kind of picture my grandparents and giving them an avenue to learn and dabble in this stuff. Because I've watched people that swore it off and hated it, and then they kind of warm up to it, and they start tinkering with it, and they fall in love with it, and then they become, advanced users somewhere down the road. And I'll tell you this, that we're going to start running classes. One of the things I get asked all the time is about our Windows 10 classes. A lot of you know how to use the computer to turn it on and get to where you need to go, but you'd like to learn a little bit of depth to it. So Rich and I decided to start putting Windows 10 classes together. Again, if you want to sign up for one of these classes, you're going to go to youngstowncomputer.com, book an appointment,
You're going to pick one of our classes. You can sign yourself up, pick the seats, $50 a seat. You'll get to hang out. Like we're going to have three different Windows 10 classes. We're going to have the intro. And the intro is basically, if you're just getting started, like you pick up a mouse and you feel like you're out of place, we're going to show you the interface, how to click around, how to get different places of on Windows 10. Is very, very, very basic. And because you, it's a prerequisite that you have to be able to get to places in order to teach the next one, the intermediate one is where you start configuration, getting around the control panel, making customizations, adding things like printers. That's the intermediate. And then the advanced phase is sort of like your hacks, tips, and tricks. And so we're going to run all three of those. So please let me know if you have interest in any of those. We will put you on the list so that when we run these, we'll let you know that it's being run. I think one's over there already, but please call the number 330-259-7278. Leave word on the residential services that you are, you want to be put on the Windows 10 list. Let us know which one of the three. You're going to get voicemail when you go over there, but say intro, intermediate, or advanced along those lines. Intro is the GUI of the interface and clicking around. Intermediate is where you start getting into configuration. And then advanced is going to be hacks and doing things quicker and multitasking and, you know, higher end stuff. So please leave word on there. Rich will take your name down. We'll put you on the list. And then when we get something scheduled for sure, pretty much a class is going to run every Friday and every Saturday, every week from now until the end of time. And we're going to switch up topics, but I want to collect what you want to learn. And so if you don't want a Windows 10 class, call up the 259 number, 330-259-7278, and just tell us what you want us to run, and then we will run those classes because we basically have 52 of them fill every year, and they can't all be Windows 10 classes. So give us some stuff that you want to learn, and then we'll put it together and make a class. And again, if you feel comfortable, you can be in person. If you don't feel comfortable, then you can be on the Zoom side. Well, guess what? We're going to run a Zoom class. Why would we run a Zoom class, you ask? Well, because if one of our stations is a Zoom class, you're going to have to learn to use it in order to sit in our classes. So if you mask up and use your hand sanitizer and put your biohazard suit on and come in and take the Zoom class, that's really the only one you'll have to take to learn how to use Zoom. And then once you know how to use Zoom, then you can sit in on the, all of the classes via the Zoom station. And the way that works is he's got a big TV that has a hat on it, and then you will all be on the Zoom station where Rich can see you out of the peripheral on the left side of his eye. And every 15 minutes, he turns on the microphones so that you can ask questions as if you were sitting there. So it's an amazing little setup, and it allows a lot more interactions. And you know, so if you've been putting off learning how to use Zoom, that's one of the first classes that we're going to be teaching over there. But again, that one might need you to be in person because. You know, or if you want to wing it, if you're like, hey, I want to take a Zoom class and I want to do it via Zoom, you can see how there might be some recursive problems built into that strategy. But hey, we're willing to do it. I mean, if the class has to start by calling you up and teaching you how to get on Zoom, I mean, so be it. Anyway, but call that number, 330-259-7278. Leave your stuff in there so we run the proper classes/workshops/ you know, crash courses, whatever you want to call it. I want to jam some information into your head, and I want to pick the topics that are most valuable to you. So next one, let's see, next question. And these are text messages. So if you want to text me, 333-1570. Hey, Joe, I'm thinking about cutting the cord, but I'm really addicted to my DVR and missing commercials. Can you do streaming services, Chromecast, and still miss your commercials, or do you lose that option? That is a good question. I have not quite figured out how they do that. So for instance, if I watch something like The Walking Dead, okay, on AMC, which is part of the YouTube TV, if I watch that, then it's zero commercials. Like there's no commercials that are on that. I don't know if they are on the broadcast side. Maybe they don't do commercials. Maybe they're paid subscription only. But for some reason, there are zero commercials. But then I can do something like Impractical Jokers that's on comedy. No, it's not on Comedy Central. It's on True TV. And there are commercials, not traditional commercials, but commercials that are probably just for the streaming side. And some of them are skippable. Some of them are unskippable. I'm pretty sure that if you use the button on your remote, I think it'll let you like skip 15 seconds. And I timed it out that there's like usually three commercials during a commercial break, and I can hit it you know, 4 times, 3, 12 times, and I'm right about the end of commercials. So I found I have not noticed that commercials have been a thing. I'm with you. I don't really like watching commercials either. And I think that DVR has done a lot to skip it. So that's YouTube TV. They have traditional like data recording. So it basically just takes the feed on a segment of time. And then they have software that tries to get rid of commercials. And I think that's on TiVo or one of the other packages. I just bought a new one, and it was made by Amazon, and it does an antenna cut in, and it will record shows to a DVR using regular over the air. And I have not begun to use that one yet. Okay, so you guys know, last year I bought a motorhome, and I started traveling across the country, right? And I don't like when I'm out on the road to have to stream stuff because my data, I get 20 gigs of data per month, right? And if you watch a show, a movie that's using 4 gigs per hour, you could pretty much watch 4 shows a month and then you start exceeding your data. So I really don't like watching TV, streaming live stuff. You know what I like doing? Attaching an antenna or a cable box, because when you go to a campground, sometimes they hand you a little cable, and then you can plug this thing into the DVR. Your scheduling records a bunch of shows, and then you can go watch the shows that it pulled down on the over the air. Like, it passively goes out and records the stuff that it can pick up via antenna or cable. The only reason I haven't used it is because, you know, you have to do that on purpose. You have to plug it in and configure the channels and whatever, and then let her go. And I don't watch that much TV when I'm on a trip. So I've just been sparingly using it and probably going over data a little more than I should, but I just haven't, you know, gone to the depths of that technology yet. But it's kind of in theory, it should probably deliver what I'm looking for. Now, I signed up for Starlink, and this is the satellite internet that Elon Musk has been blasting off into lower atmosphere or lower space orbit over the last couple years. And it's geo-locked right now, which means I can set this satellite dish outside of my house. I pay $100 a month, and there's no data caps, and I get broadband. If it points at the sky and it pulls down broadband. It's geo-locked, so if I go to Florida right now and I set up my satellite dish on the top of the motorhome, it's going to say you're not in Youngstown, Ohio, and I'm not going to be able to get to internet. But they just put in a license for the FCC to allow them to travel with these things so that the internet can go with you. Now, if that's the case, and I could just point the thing at the sky and have internet no matter where I go, there we go. I'm going to stream everything, and I'm not going to have to do something like coaxial or antenna or anything like that. So that's kind of what I'm banking on. For the next maybe 6 months until that happens, I'm just not going to watch TV. I've decided that when I'm camping and when I'm out, I'm not going to watch TV because I don't have to. And that's the way I've decided. So talk to me in 6 months and I'll tell you how Starlink works out as I travel across the country. Okay. Tell Bob to use his Wi-Fi, not self-service. Thank you. And I think I did articulate that. But if I didn't, if you watch the streaming stuff over your cell, you're going to drain through your data. Some of you have unlimited data, you don't care. Some of you have data caps, it's going to matter if you do. So as this texter says, please do not drain your data watching streaming because it goes by pretty quick. I don't really pay attention to what the bandwidth usage is on streaming. And the first time I was kind of surprised, I was on I rented an RV. It's before I owned one. I rented an RV, and it was the national championship. I was traveling, I think it was right around New Year's, and the national championship and NCAA football game was on, and I watched it, and Ohio State was in it, and I used, in a four-hour segment, I used all of my data for that segment, and I was so mad because I only watched 4 hours, and I didn't really get to enjoy it. But anyway, 330-729-9977. Texter says Chromecast and Fire Sticks have all the services they need without using the phone. There's IMDb, there's Pluto, there's literally hundreds of free services and channels. You don't even need to launch your phone or even ever write just using the Chrome Stick or Fire Stick. And that is another deal. And even so, some of these services are built into the TVs as well. So I just got a Samsung and it has an Apple TV, it has Prime, it has a Fire Stick all built into it. So all the services are already built into the television. So all of these different flavors as you arrange them have to kind of work out for you. I just suggested that I want to only enter my passwords in my phone. I want my TV to be pretty dumb. Walk into a room, send my stuff out to the TV, and I walk away. But if you want to use your TV as your smart device, then as this texter suggests, that all of these services I'm talking about, you do not have to include your phone in. You can use a little remote, go to the app, log into it. Once you're logged in, you never have to do it again, and then just watch all of your stuff right through that. So thank you, text messenger. I appreciate that. And back to the training, just to give you an idea, just to give you an idea of what the process is going to be like. When we started doing training the original time, we had a group of about 12 people that took pretty much every class that I offered on Wednesday nights. It was my favorite part of the week, honestly, because I really do love teaching. And so Wednesday nights, we would have the class, and pretty much the same people would show up at all the classes. And at the end of this class, they would say, hey, you know what? I really want to learn about eBay, or I really want to learn about digital photography, or I want to learn about YouTube. I want to learn about podcasting, right? So at the end of every class, they would pretty much tell me what I was going to be teaching on the previous one. And then I would go out and advertise that we're running that. Maybe we get one or two new people, but it was amazing. And I think that that group of people that would follow every class that we ran was probably one of the most memorable enterprises that we had, or the most successful, because it's one thing to advertise that you're doing something and having capacity, but to keep selling to the same people and them getting value out of it every time. Pretty much I have this philosophy when I teach a class that every 15 minutes has to represent like a light bulb moment, something that even if you've been doing this for a while, you're like, oh, right. So if we're teaching something about user interface, I'll show you some kind of shortcut to make what you already knew a little bit faster. And then I watch these light bulbs go off, these lightning strikes, and they're like, hey, that just validated this 15 minutes as being a valuable 15 minutes. Because you never know. When you put something together, you don't know what someone's already going to know. And it's just amazing to watch people really get value out of the things that you're saying. It's very fulfilling from my side. So anyway, lots of classes we're going to be running. You're going to be able to log yourself in, pick out all the classes that you want, subscribe to all the classes that you want. In the spring, when we really get into the spring deal, we're going to have some offerings for memberships rather than paying for every class, that you can subscribe to it on a monthly basis and then take advantage of reduced emergency services costs and having hardware upgrades that are built in and just tons of benefits for you guys that already deal with us. We want to give our most loyal customers and the people that have been with us over the years just an extra bonus and incentive. So we'll have some membership programs put together. And just to, like I said, to reward those of you who have been super loyal to us over the years, we really appreciate you. 330-729-9977. You can text me at 333-1570. We spent a couple minutes here talking about, since I invoked Starlink, if you watch this, the space program is something that just amazes me. I'm captivated by, when I was a kid, how much energy and resources we put into space exploration. You know, the space shuttles would be taking off on a regular basis. It was always a big deal. Kids were answering the question, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be an astronaut. And then we went this lull where all the energy got sucked out of the space program and we really didn't innovate. And it was just kind of like underdone, especially when we killed the shuttle program. But even after we killed it, it wasn't really resonating with people like it did at one time. We weren't impressed by it for some reason. And now we're finally back where the space program is impressing, where I think people, when they see that they want to be part of Starlink or SpaceX or NASA or Blue Origin or all of these different high innovations, I love the fact that they're, a majority are being front-loaded by private industry, and private industry is serving into government rather than the other side, or the other way around. And I love that the youth get to see that, that we're doing these big things that we don't necessarily have to. I mean, I sit down and I watch this guy's building, Elon Musk is building a rocket that has a potential to go to Mars, right? And from a private company standpoint, like, what is the benefit? What is the payout for going to Mars other than it's just the goal? And everybody who buys products from this guy knows that a portion of what they're buying into is a guy that has ambitions to go to Mars. And I love the fact that all of us are all in on that, right? If somebody called me up tomorrow and said, hey, you know what? 7-month trip to Mars, do you want to go? I would totally say yes. I mean, it's that much of a, it's been on the forefront since I was a kid, talking about Mars and how fascinated we are with the prospects of colonizing it and doing, doing something there. If you read a couple weeks ago, they're doing a lot. The moon's going to kind of come into play as well. The moon is probably going to be a launching off point for a lot of the stuff that we move from. The Earth is really expensive to escape the gravitational pull of. So they want to use sort of like the moon as some kind of launching point where you don't have so much energy and resources put into getting out of Earth's atmosphere. Like maybe you put some infrastructure on there that you're launching rockets and stuff like that from the moon. And maybe it's less expensive that way. But they're also saying that they're going to take and harbor, if you had an extinction event here on planet Earth, that they were putting some resources on the moon that would allow those who escaped, the extinction event, that would either be able to take those things and repopulate the Earth or move to a different thing. So we're definitely thinking a little differently, thinking a little differently now. And it's, like I said, it's kind of interesting, kind of amusing, but it's all awesome. I think when you push humanity like this, the way that we think, the innovations that happen because of this, I just think it's off the charts. So I'm well in that camp. Even if it's a little dose of craziness, I'm all for a little dose of craziness. So, all right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We can take some more of your phone calls. We got a whole another hour to talk to you. You can call 330-729-9977, or you can text me all program long. The text number is 330-333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier. Question. Because I'm listening to the computer show, I have a Samsung S7. I want to watch Disney Plus on my Hitachi TV. Your TV does have an HDMI port and USB ports. Can I stream Discovery Plus from my Samsung S7 to my TV via Chromecast or Amazon Fire Stick? Can, once it's on the TV, can I turn off my phone from your phone up to the TV? Is that right? You absolutely can. And in fact, it plays very nicely that you have a Samsung, that you are able to do casting from your phone directly to those devices. And it does a handoff. So once you start streaming, it will dump off the stream to the device or the app that you're streaming to, and then you can shut the display off. So a lot of the stuff that we bring in through Facebook Live, so pretty much a lot of venues have switched over. They'll do YouTube, they'll be Twitter, and they'll do Facebook Live. So you can bring up something on Facebook, and if you close out Facebook and do other things, it closes off. Like, you don't get the video feed. But if you send it out to your TV and then close Facebook, well, it did the handoff. Your TV now is playing the content, and then you're free to go do other things on your phone, and it frees off sort of that as a source. So I think it's a great method. And yes, you do have everything. If you've got a Chromecast, if you've got a Fire Stick, if you've got an Android or a Samsung S7, you can do all of the above. Play around with it. See what you can do. My favorite's YouTube. YouTube's probably the most universal. You have a stream, either recorded or a live stream. And then if you tap on the video, top right-hand corner, it looks like a little television set. If you tap on that, it'll show you all of the available devices that you can stream out to. And that's your easiest way to send it out. Now, if you're in an Apple product, then it will show up as like a little computer. So that would be the difference between, you're going to have to an Apple TV if you're watching like a iTunes movie or something like that. But yeah, play around with it and see if you like it, and let me know, because I'm all about the feedback that you guys can deliver to me, so I can put something together that will enable more of you to get to the stuff that that I'm talking about. And the easiest road, the easiest path that we can possibly. I know that there's a billion different flavors. I'm looking for. I'm picturing a dude, right? And I want to not send an obstacle his way. I want him to give him the most chance to be able to do this and not hate it and say, I'm not doing that again. Because sometimes you got one chance for someone to go off the reservation and do something different. And if it's hard or cumbersome, they're going to think it's stupid and never do it again. And I don't want to lose people that are otherwise willing to watch content, but if it's freaking hard, they're not going to do it. So thank you for that message. I appreciate it. And all those ways, you can text me, you can email, and it's really important to me to get the feedback on the classes that are going to be run. Even if there's some equipment that you would really like to know how to use, let me know the devices that you'd like to know. I mean, everybody, and their mom has a Cricut vinyl plotter, so you can make little stickers and stuff. And people love being able to print their own stuff out and affix it to the outside of their cars and stuff like that. But we got a big version of that. So we got a vinyl plotter that we can print on 12-inch spools of vinyl. So you can make these big banner stickers and stick them on the side of buildings and sayings and outside of cars and stuff like that. So if you're interested in learning how to do the vinyl plotter, that we're going to have a demo on that. But if there's something I did not mention and that you'd really like to know how it works, we may be able to add it to our routine. So please, joe@youngstowncomputer.com, email me. You can text me here at 333-1570, and I will take your information back and put something together. All of this starts in April. So we're going to be the retail part, first 2 weeks of April, we're going to start assembling that. And by May 1st, it's going to be on fire. And we're going to have classes every Friday. We're going to have retail space open every Saturday morning, running all the way through the day. And we're going to have those classes that are changed up and run all kind of stuff. So again, sorry to repeat for five times. I'm super excited that we're going to be doing this again, because I was kind of sad that we didn't do it or stop doing it. And the only reason we did that is because I had a kid and it was more important to me to spend as much time with my newborn. And so we killed the classes and lost all that momentum. But I'm kind of sad. Not sad that I spent time with my kid, that's for sure. But sad that it went away as a part of that. So 330-729-9977. And we also are still doing manufacturing computers, and I know a lot of you have purchased the desktops from Youngstown Computer. I discovered another low-cost machine, and I will tell you this story after we be back from the next break, but let me tell you a little bit about it. So my deal was, not every computer that I build has to be a powerhouse. Sometimes I walk up to a workstation, and I just need to do like the basics, get on the internet, open a couple tabs, check my email, send print jobs to a printer, and so these what I consider a low-end machine, I hate when I have to spend $600-$800 on a machine that is just going to be doing like really low-end tasks. So I tried to discover a device that for a couple $100 would give me access to the same kind of things. And what I was coming up with things like Chromeboxes and I have limited, I've had some limitations where I can get to the internet. It was close and it was cheap, but it was still a little bit too far away, and so I was coming up blanks. But I found a device, and I'm going to explain how you get a hold of one of these, and it may be something that might add to our, we might add to our product lineup, because we have the regular computer, but we don't have a low-end version of it. So I'm going to talk about that when we come back. 330-729-9977 or 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your Saturday show where we talk about things that are happening in tech. We haven't got to do one of these in quite a bit of time, so when I open it up, anything that you've been kind of stewing on here for the last couple months, hit me with it. If you have any questions about computers, if technology, you just want to talk about something that's happening in the computer world, feel free. Get a hold of me, 330-729-9977, or you can text me. Text is a great way that when you're out and about, maybe you're stuck on 224 or over in Niles, and you want to wing some of that snark at me, go for it. 330-333-1570 is the text line. You can ask questions that way or make comments, and I'll bring them into the show all program long. So I did notice that we've been pretty busy on the shopping districts here in our area. That's good to see. I'm glad all of you are getting out and enjoying some of this weather. I am certainly, after the program, going to enjoy the weather with my family as well. We're going to be off next week. We're traveling down over the Easter break down to Florida. It seems like that's where everybody from Ohio, when the weather's not so great, we end up going down to Florida, making homes down in Florida, having dual citizenship in Florida. That might be something I'll entertain, but I just like the little bit of a reprieve. Now, it's been beautiful here, so there's nothing really to escape, but you really never know when you're scheduling these things what March is going to present to you, whether or not it's going to be, you know, a snowstorm or if it's going to be, you know, in the 70s. And fortunately, it's in the 70s, and so is Florida right now. So it's going to be, you know, ocean and sun for me for the next week. After I think we're heading out on Thursday of next week and hit the weekend, enjoy Easter down there, and then head back after that. 330-729-9977 is the phone number. And also, you know, I wanted to bring this up a little bit because we have meetings pretty regularly about the changing and the marketplace and what it's going to look like in the coming months and years. And let me paint the picture. Like when I first started, computers were really expensive. I mean, you weren't getting away with much less than $1,000 for, a machine. And they were usually pretty underpowered, and it took some sophistication. And a lot of people that delved into it were hobbyists, and the regular people stayed far away from it because it just wasn't, you know, or easy enough for regular people to start using. And then the era came where software was good and hardware was good, and you had mass adoption, and everybody had it, and training was off the charts. I mean, I could do classes, you know, 5 days a week because everybody was new to it. And then if you took a class, you became more proficient. And so it was huge, off the charts. I mean, we had companies that would be teaching Word to their employees. They'd be teaching, Excel and Access and what's that contact management software, ACT. That was another one. So anyway, we were teaching like nonstop because it was in such a demand. Now you fast forward a little bit. Now everybody kind of knows how to use it, and Windows XP was decent, and then Windows 7 was halfway decent, but 90% of everything that came through our door was some kind of malware infection. 90% of everything we dealt with was some kind of adware, malware, virus infection. So what made us start talking about it is like, what is it going to look like one day when they somehow, they're not going to completely solve it, but what happens when they make it difficult for viruses and malware and adware to infiltrate? And that will happen, right? So not only will that happen, you know, machines then will self-heal, and machines will entirely in the future somewhere won't really be machines. You won't have a desktop computer because we'll evolve to a place where desktop computers aren't just part of how we use these things. Our interactions will be way more intuitive. It won't be us using it like it was an appendage. It will become part of who we are. And so for a company that did a lot of what they do in instruction and virus mitigation and, you know, selling hardware, I mean, all of that stuff has a shelf life where soon, like, what's next? Where do we fit in? You know, what happens when computers don't break? What happens when the hardware gets so inexpensive that, you know, there's no margin in it? What happens when what you do becomes such a commodity that you can't really do it anymore? And so we've had about monthly meetings since we became a company in what happens when this segment that 90% of our business disappears, and we start investing in whatever happens after that so that when that does disappear, which it does every time, follow that same strategy every time, what's next? And one thing that will never disappear, and that's education. And I don't care if it's education about computers or software or how to do stuff, there will always be people that will need to know how to do something, and it will change. Like the old demographic, the older demographic, those of you who are, you know, 45 and up, know that they can purchase information and they don't mind purchasing information, right? So the foreign stuff, you know, that you either want to hire someone to do it or purchase the information for yourself, and there was really didn't make you mad to be able to do that. 45 and younger are the DIYers, right? They grew up with it. They're intelligent about it. It's more intuitive. It's more ingrained in who they are. So they're close enough to the information that they think it's close enough to be within reach. So they try a lot more stuff on their own. They're the more frustrated because they have the harder time just hiring it out to another person because of how close they are with knowing. At least the older generation knew that they weren't close enough to even try, but that generation, the 45 and younger, at least think they can. Well, the whole marketplace responded to that. So, while they might get into new stuff, let's just make stuff so sort of like
end-to-end, you know, the hardware and the software being end-to-end, and the interfaces end-to-end, and the experience end-to-end. And that way you didn't have to learn much. You had to just immerse yourself into it, and it was intuitive, and you can kind of walk your way through it. So what would you be training 10 years from now? Like, what would I need to show you that you don't have right now? You know, infrastructure. There will be a time when you don't have to have internet inside your house. Why? Because internet is just kind of everywhere. It's wireless and it's beamed down at you, and having infrastructure run to your house is kind of pointless because then you're responsible for it. You got to set up wireless access points. You got to set up routers. What happens when your router is floating above your house, right? You just, you know, fix an antenna on it and all your devices know how to connect to it. And now it's not part of your responsibility. Well, life gets a little cheaper and you get to outsource that to someone, you know, who knows how to use it better than you do. But I will tell you that there will always be a segment of you that will need or want to be shown how to do stuff they don't know how to do. And it will be up to us to formulate it. So instead of maybe teaching you basics, we got to elevate what we're teaching you. Like, now you know how to use the wrench, right? The wrench is the wrench is the wrench. Now let's think of some creative things to do with the wrench that's either expressive, where it has an element of, you know, your imagination or your creative faculties. Or maybe it's the mechanical. You can build something that does something else once you know how to use it. And that's where we will have to elevate what we do to the next realm, where just not giving you sort of the stage anymore, but helping you develop above that stage. And I know that it's a little abstract, but you got to understand that when we have these meetings, it used to be, you know, easy to pick out what was going to happen next. And you know, it's almost like the discussion of if artificial intelligence are making decisions for human beings, and we're noticing in the digital world that artificial intelligence is doing a fairly good job at delivering to us the things that we need. And we watch the, you know, we can go back in time and not be delivered those. Like, compare what it used to be like before artificial intelligence was delivering us a more cultivated or a nurtured environment versus now. And we'll choose the artificial intelligence, because if you don't notice it and it's doing a good job, then it's doing what it should do. And we will give more responsibility to it. So 330-729-9977. Steve from Canfield says, have you heard anything about Dragonfly TV app? I heard you can get thousands of channels for only $10 per device watching at any one time, and it is configured from the Amazon Fire Stick. So yeah, and what I'm most excited, and I haven't not heard of Dragonfly specifically, but you're going to have three different things. You're going to have mass appeal, okay? So you're going to have the big ones, the big apps, and so you're going to have the ones done by Amazon, the ones done by Netflix, the ones done by YouTube, and think of it as that they're gathering content, they're packaging it up, they're pricing it through their app, and then you can watch it. Then you're going to have your second tier where you have more independence. What I would guess is that they're either, I don't know the word, it's aggregators, aggregators, people who slam multiple sources together and give you access to it. So let's just say that they have a stream for some kind of content, and then they find out how to bring that stream in, and then they offer it to you. So the people who do aggregation have this, are that second. Now, they might not have licensing distribution that way. They might be just taking feeds from other places and directing it in one spot to you. And then you have the third tier, which is the I'm going to call it pirating. Maybe it's a little strong to call it pirating, but the people who don't have any access to the licensing are pretty much going to a market that doesn't like regulate it, and then offering over the internet in a way that you can grab it. So if you're watching a movie without having to pay for it, or you're subscribed to a channel that you don't have to pay for it, and you have to use some special app that changes every once in a while, you're probably one of these pirated ones that, you know, it takes some extra skill, and it happens. I mean, when I first started, I mean, people were building these little coaxial filters that would help them de-scramble premium services, right? And that was a big thing. And then you had the satellite cards, where you buy a satellite dish and a satellite card, or a satellite receiver. You put in this little satellite card that basically unlocked all of the premium stuff, and you put it in. So it's no different. I mean, we do this every time. When you lock down some programming, people figure out how to way to unlock it, and then they figure out how to relock it, and then you figure out how to unlock it. It's just part of the game. So yeah, there's a lot of that out there with streaming. That a lot of that's kind of hijacked from markets that are not regulated and then offered. If it happens too often, they figure out, they shut them down, and they pop up under a new name, and then you can do that. Now, I'm not saying Dragonfly is that. It's probably one of those third tier where it's got some programming. Sounds like for $10, if it truly does have all of the same stuff, I mean, it would be extremely valuable. But I'd be interested if you do experience it, let us know what the experience was like. What is its shortcomings? Like, why $10? What can you tell as how they're cutting their licensing costs so that they can offer it to you for $10? So thank you, Steve from Canfield, and I look forward to hearing from you. You get all the channels that run regular cable plus all the pay-per-views as well. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking then. That's also from Steve. I'm thinking that it's probably that a company is getting away with doing it. Now, there were a couple. I remember Walmart had a company that offered low-cost cable, and it wasn't pirated. It wasn't illegal, but it was not – I think it was not great quality, and it didn't last for very long. I don't remember what it was called, but I think, you know, if you get a sense for you're getting something for nothing, I don't think that the people that distribute or create this stuff are going to be okay with people getting it for free. And so while I don't think they're going to come after you and punish you, I don't think it's going to be offered for very long until they get shut down, because they're, these companies don't play around with people giving away their stuff for free. And $10 doesn't seem like it's enough to, you know, pay the licensing on all of that. But keep me abreast. Let me know what that, if it ends up being legit, then $10 for all the cable and pay-per-view, that's pretty significant. We do actually have, at our Youngstown computer office, we are participants in a streaming service where it is, they are basically capturing any over-the-air transmissions. So they installed an antenna, and they basically have this antenna pulling down over-the-air content and then streaming it. Okay. And then, so they have subscribers who have access then to any of the streamed content. I don't know who actually latches into this, but they pay us a licensing fee to erect the antenna. They pull down the feeds, they put it out there in part of their stream. So that might be part of the regular cable. I don't know licensing wise, you know, what the regulations are on that, but if there are people like, you know, those feeds, like I can grab a feed from Australia or Chicago or whatever, and these are affiliates like NBC affiliates, CBS affiliates, Fox affiliates, and you can watch those different markets. And I imagine that's how they do it, that they have to actually grab a feed right from the network, or they could just grab the feed from over the air and just republish it. But again, there's some extreme sensitivities to licensed content when it comes to streaming services. So all your traditional YouTubes and whatever are will object. I mean, if we can't even play a clip on any of our shows down at the studio, you play a 10-second clip of something that's licensed material, even if you're doing commentary on it, and they'll shut down your feeds. So they don't play around with that stuff happening. So again, I hate to go long on that, but I just wanted to get you to understand that if it exists, it might not exist for very long if it's not legit. But not saying it's not, just it might not be. So 330-729 9977. And I've talked about this in years past. I'm going to talk about it on the other side of this break, but I like to shop for not mainstream vendors. Like I like to support individuals and try to put money in their pocket ahead of maybe bigger groups. And so I'm going to talk about a couple of those outsourcing or third-party or contracting websites that I'm playing around with. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your Saturday show. We talk about things that are happening with tech. So if you have any questions, feel free, 330-729-9977. You can also text me at 333-1570. Talking about the gig economy, and I want to kind of introduce what this is so that those of you who are not familiar with it, get familiar with it. So in the future, the way that this is going to work is you might not necessarily work a job, right? You might not have a job that you go to 40 hours a week. You might work for maybe 10 different websites that filter
jobs to you, that you take them for a period of time, and then once you're done with those, you might do something entirely different. So you might be working on occupation A. Like maybe you have 12 occupations. Maybe you know how to do 12 different things, and you feel like doing plumbing today. You go to the page that's giving you plumbing work. Maybe you do editing work the next day. You go to a page that offers you editing work the next day. And so we're kind of living in an era where those conduits or those pages that distribute this work are kind of working out the kinks to be able to get that work to you. So when I have I have some go-to people local that when I need graphics created, that I have a developer. But when I have some weird stuff that happens, I will throw it out to the gig economy sites. I think my favorite one at this point is Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R. And they call it that because it's essentially most of the gig work that you send out there really only, you know, is around the $5 mark. I paid a couple $100 for some things, but for the most part, if you want to trial somebody out and see what they can do, you put up $5 and they can give you some results. And if you like it, you can keep upgrading your orders and giving them different things to do. So you might have a portfolio of people that you trust to bring all kinds of stuff to them. I've tried out graphics development. I've had people make video. I've had 3D renderings created. I had someone do publicist duties where I had enough publicist work to do to have somebody, but I didn't have enough to keep anybody full-time or even part-time. It was just so ad hoc. But these are great because you don't have to carry one person along. You put your job out there and people say bid on it and you pay them and they distribute the work. And I've gotten pretty good results from it. I mean, there's some times when I was working with a specialty where there were some communication issues, maybe language barriers. And so you're talking to someone who's a very creative, very good developer, but doesn't speak English as their native tongue. And so that you have some problems there. But for the most part, anybody who I can communicate with understands what I want them to do and they put it together. And I'm thinking, wow, how is it that cheap? And so they're pretty good from a product standpoint. But I guess the theme is that in the future, you as a worker might not have to be beholden to one company or make your existence, your whole employment future doesn't have to go through one person. And I don't know if that makes you feel more secure or less secure, that if you lost one job, you basically have 9 employers or 100 employers or an infinite amount of employers that you can use. And then so, you know, if a company goes belly up and they are your 40-hour-a-week person, I mean, what do? You're just out of a job and got to go find another one. So I think the dynamics of taking talent in the workplace gets to change a little bit, because if you're a smart person, you might be pursued like a wide receiver in the NFL. You know, if they have these sites that profile you and you put your skill set out there, you could have people that try to find you specifically if you're good enough at a task. And especially if you're if you're in a specialty that's hard to find, you could find, you know, you're working your 9-to-5, but you start putting your profile out there, start subscribing and letting people know what it is that you do. You've got a portfolio of things that you have done. You can articulate it. Well, just through the magic of artificial intelligence and the internet, people will find that specialty and they may be able to purchase that. You might be able to make far more money ad hoc with jobs that you have space between, working 10, 15, 20 hours a week rather than 40 hours a week. Let's be honest. Like when you work a 40-hour, how much really effective, efficient time are you doing, and how many water cooler discussions and pee breaks and smoke breaks are you taking? And so I think it'll consolidate it where the people who are purchasing it will get exactly what they want. They won't feel like they have to hire you for another 40 hours for the sake of doing it. And you'll get to work like for 20 different employers, some, you know, doing some things in all kinds of different specialties. That appeals to me like crazy. And can you imagine if artificial intelligence are serving you where they can make guesses and they can move product closer to you and they can connect you with people who it guesses that you're going to need? You know, you have a baby and it starts moving specialties to you that people who have babies are likely to need. You open a business and it starts moving resources that people who just open a business need, and it starts figuring out and bringing information and resources and people closer to you so that it's not a manual thing. I think the stupidest thing in the world is what I have to go through when I go through a hiring process, where I have to do interviewing and resumes, Because out of the 350 million people in this country, you get a sampling of 20 people that just happen to not have a job at the time. And what are the chances that they are the perfect person for you? What if the algorithms were constantly scouring people that were perfect for you and delivering the guy that maybe has a job right now, but at least you know that's the guy that you really want if he were available? And anyway, that's again what's going to happen in the future, and we're just kind of making strides toward that, and I'm totally up for it, totally embracing it. 330-729-9977 or text me 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and your host on the this, your Saturday show, to talk about things that are happening in tech. We have a Monday, we have another launch that SpaceX may be making. I talk a lot about this, and in fact, when they do launches and I'm sitting home at home, I'll actually do a stream and do some commentary during these things. But they're so cool to watch. If you watch the last couple, they've pretty much blown up just about every time. No, actually, every time. They've been trying to so basically where we're at, the first one we did was Starhopper, and this was just like a little version of it. It went up a couple, you know, a couple kilometers, and then it landed back down. And that's the only one I don't think blew up. And then when they got the Starship, the full capsule, that they basically, the first one went up 10 kilometers. It hovered there for a couple minutes. Then it started, kind of flopped over and then glided down through the atmosphere. And once it got to a certain point, it's supposed to flip itself vertical, rev up the engines, and then land it softly on a landing pad. The last part there, it did not. And its engines either did not light fast enough, and it basically hit the ground and did a RUD, rapid, unexpected disassembly. And the last time, and this would be serial number 10, actually, it fired up all its engines. It slowly, came down to Earth, but a little too fast. And I think it crippled one of the landing gear, and it basically sat for a couple minutes on the ground on fire until it eventually exploded. But that was the closest thing to a landing that we actually got with that rocket. And so Monday, I believe they're clearing for another one, and they are expecting this one to actually nail the landing, which would be interesting, because the next phase of this is that there is a second booster that this capsule will sit on. And when you watch this thing's immense on its own. You got to understand that there's a whole other capsule that is below, or a whole other rocket that's below this that gets it up into low Earth orbit before the Starship actually engages its engines. And so this should be interesting. We'll be able to see if Starship sails, flips, lands, and is recoverable where it could be used. Because them blowing up and going up in this flames of whatever is probably getting pretty expensive and taxing on their operations. I'm pretty sure the FAA does not like when things blow up. And so licensing them with the stipulation that it's a dangerous enterprise trying to nail this. If you got the Falcon 9 rocket, blew up a ton of them in the beginning, and now they land like clockwork. They really never have a problem. They lost a couple in the ocean, but they don't blow up in spectacular fashion anymore. So we've made advances. But anyway, so the double-ended one is probably after 11. After they've nailed a couple of these landings, we'll probably start to see the booster getting tested out, and then this thing is probably going to be used first as a delivery system. So we have the Falcon 9 rocket that goes up and releases these Starlink satellites, which is in low Earth orbit. And then this next one is probably going to be taking satellites a little bit further into the atmosphere, which is probably we're going to see. I don't know if the single could do it, but the one with the booster could probably do. So it's interesting. If you guys are paying attention to that, feel free to follow me over on my Facebook feeds, Joe Danier on Facebook, or Youngstown Studio. You can follow me down there and check in everything we've got going on down there. I will usually post some commentary on my personal page on that. I'm not too down with Twitter. I mean, I've tried a couple times. I know we put the studio stuff out there, but personally, I don't really do much on there. It's a pretty brutal place. And I don't know that my kind of content really fits in well. I mean, I could do snark, I could do sarcasm like the best of them, but I don't know. It just doesn't, it's not an inspiring thing for me. So hang out a bunch of it. No matter what happens, like we can all guess what the Twitter response is going to be on anything that happens, right? It doesn't even really have to be political. It could be just literally anything, and everything devolves into the components of that you would expect, right? You have some people who love it and are supportive of it and say nice things about it, and you have other people that had a bad day that day and just decide that they would like to drag it through the mud. No matter what it is, it could be the most pure thing, and it would be dragged through the mud because that is what Twitter is. And so I just don't play over there very long. So I don't know if you, you know, if your whole world is over there, then Joe Daniel has probably been pretty missing in your life. But I, again, trying to warm up to it every once in a while. I make some rough attempts at it, but I've stayed clear of it and except putting some of our content out on it, which that's, I think that's how we'll roll with it. Okay. So let me tell you about a little bit about Youngstown Computer. We bring you this show. This is sort of like, to give you some insight in it, you know, you have stuff that we do well, and that's our business, that when we do it well, we, you know, we have an hourly rate for it. When those things happen, we'd appreciate it that you allow us to, you know, make our living on it. And there's some stuff that's small that isn't really worth, you know, paying an hourly rate for. So we basically created this space so that we can share that and help you on those smaller things. To get you motivated. I mean, it's serving, because if you become a bigger user, then you're probably going to need us more anyhow. And so we don't really mind sharing the small things with you to help you become a better user. It makes us feel pretty good that we can take a whole area and claim that we've had an impact and helped people become a better computer user, bar none. I mean, there's no challenge to that. And so that, you know, we feel really good that we've played that role in this area. And so, but if there is something that you do need, we'd appreciate it if you call 330-259-7278. Write the number down, put it on a sticky note. It's one of my favorite things. I see a computer that has a sticky note on the side that has our phone number on it. I know that you were a listener. You heeded the call to take a sticky note, write our number down, and it's on the side of that. And that brings a smile to my face, because that's, I've been saying that for years, and you guys listen. And because when we're talking about this stuff, we don't always need us like right now. So, you know, either I have to keep reminding you, or I can remind you once, and then you do what it takes to, you know, to remember the number and know that, you know, we're volunteering to be your service provider. So 330-259-7278. Option one is for business customers. Option two is for residential customer. And then option three is for, Youngstown Studio, customers. So 330-259-7278, write that number down, put it on the side of your computer. And we will go from there. 330-259-7278. Let us go to Joe. Joe, you are on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi. How's everything going?
Good. How about you?
Going pretty good. If it's okay, I'd just like to share a little app that people might like on their PC. You've just been talking about like SpaceX, and have you been following like the Mars mission that they have right now?
Absolutely. In love with it.
Yeah, did you know about that little Mars clock program you can download?
No, tell me about it.
All you have to do is just search for Mars 24, just all one word, Mars 24, on Google or whatever. And it's a download from NASA, so if you go, you'll end up at a NASA site, and you can download the program there. It's really neat. The program opens up two windows. One window has the actual, you know, what the time is right now on Mars, and the other one has a sun map of Mars. So it shows you the whole map of Mars, and it shows you where it's day and where it's night. So you can keep track of what time it is at the rover site and everything. And they have other information there, like it tells you, what the current light delay time it is to Mars. Like when it first landed, it was like 11 minutes. Now it's up to 14 minutes, you know, because we're getting farther away from Mars. So I just thought people might like that program if they want to follow along with the Mars program.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And what are your feelings on colonization of Mars? How long do you think it's going to take until we've got some human beings or at least some robotics that are building some things?
I think it's going to take a while, mainly because there's almost no atmosphere there, and there's no magnetosphere, you know, so there's nothing to protect us, you know, when we're out on the surface. So colonizing Mars necessarily probably mean we have to dig beneath the surface and live, you know, in caves to be protected from all the cosmic rays. To actually terraform it to a state where people could actually work and live out on the surface of Mars, that will take lifetimes. So that's something that we won't see in the near future, if ever.
Right. Okay, Joe, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate you being out there, and I'm glad to see that there's some other people who have interest in this kind of stuff and is watching it. And what's cool about it is, like, what you depended on your TV to kind of see where space exploration is. With digital, I mean, you could literally go watch and do things via the internet and keep track on it that way, because there's a lot of things that wouldn't be reported. But if you're a true fan of this, you can go see what's going on even when the cameras aren't fixed on it, and it makes it even that more interesting. So download Mars 24, as our last caller suggested, and then keep a track of the Mars rover. And to bring everybody up to speed that might not know, they launched in, I think it was July of last year. They launched three countries actually did this. One did a rover, one did a orbiter, and there was one other one. Maybe it was something that went to the moon. But anyway, the United States version of it went to Mars. We had this, we entered the atmosphere. They called it like a crane, a flying crane. The engines started up. It hovered there on the Martian surface. The crane then lowered the rover down to the surface, and now we have this thing that's about the size of a Volkswagen that's cruising around there very slowly on the surface, doing experiments, taking pictures. This is the first one, I believe, that had a drone ship attached to it. So at a certain point, I don't know if it's taken off yet or not, but this drone will then charge up, and it'll do some flight maneuvers and be able to go around and explore off of the surface. And I'll tell you, if you've never flown a drone before, that's exceptional. Like, to have a drone flyable via computer, and obviously it's not with human interaction, but to be able to have that level of automation when something is that far away from you, as our last caller said, that it's not a very hospitable country, not a very hospitable planet. That it'll try to kill you in more ways than here on Earth would. Not good of atmosphere. The radiations are not great. Doesn't have drinkable water. All of your resources would have to be brought with you. And there's lots of storms. So if we become sort of like a cave dwelling species that digs under the earth and then builds our stuff that where it could be safe be below the surface while we take generations of people that terraform the planet to make it livable. It has water at its poles. It's frozen. So you could probably get that stuff to melt and create some gases that will maybe eventually protect us from or create an atmosphere that's breathable, and also create, I don't know how you create a magnetosphere. That's above my pay grade a little bit to see if that's even possible. But it would take lifetimes and lifetimes, as our last caller said, to achieve where it is a habitable place. But I think what the goal is, that we're going to land a couple of things. We're going to set up some infrastructure, like you saw on the movie Mars, I think it was, where they built like a little lab space, and Matt Damon was the if you haven't watched that movie, it's probably pretty close to what we will be doing and the perils of what we'll probably be seeing while we're there. And very interesting movie if you want to paint the picture of what's likely to happen. If you're out there, I want to hear one last thing. We're going to take a couple weeks off after this show, so you won't be hearing from me, but I want to hear from some Uber driver people. If you're driving around and you are an Uber driver, how's it been lately? And we talked a little bit about the gig economy, but I guess one of the most prevalent, especially even in this area, where Uber and Lyft and Grubhub and Uber Eats and Postmates and all of these delivery services, huge demand for these things, especially with the pandemic, brought a lot of people that can make a pretty good living
bringing stuff to people who don't want to leave their house. So I want to hear from you how it's been, if the prices have been right, if you've been able to make some money, if you've been able to use it to survive, if you've been able to subsidize maybe your regular income. I drove for a little while. I think I got like 80 some rides under my belt, and just to see what it was like, see what the experience of the driver was. Just recently, there's a service called Turo, and I mentioned before I bought a motorhome, but before I bought the motorhome, I rented a motorhome, and I rented it from a site called RV Share, which the RV was actually privately owned, and when they weren't using it, they offered it up for rental, and so that I was able to go rent this RV who was somebody else's, stopped at their house, the RV site paid them, they gave me the walkthrough, I took their RV to Florida, I brought it back, and it was great. I mean, it was cheaper than flying and doing hotel rooms, and I got to rent an RV for a 10-day trip. But Turo is sort of the same thing, but with cars. And so I purchased a Jeep, and I'm going to enter it into the Turo system. So it's basically going to be rentable, where somebody maybe $100 a day can use a Jeep and take themselves around and see what demand it is. I don't know if it's going to rent one time a month. I don't know if it's going to rent every day. I just don't know. But I'm definitely going to get into the businesses of, like you have Airbnb, which is if you have a house, a vacation house that you're not using, you can let other people rent it. And you would think that would work well in tourist areas, but you can rent them just about anywhere. I could find an Airbnb in just about any city. And then instead of staying in a hotel, I can stay in somebody's house that they're not using. So pretty much, again, part of the gig economy, not only taking your specialty and leasing it out, you can take physical goods and let other people use them. And so you have your Uber and Lyft, which is you and your vehicle you're letting other people use. But Turo, you're letting someone just to jump in your car and use it for a period of time. And again, there's math behind all of this to see if they're working out. We tested Uber, and my experience was that the payouts were a little light. Okay, so if you're in an area, if you're just taking someone a ride, it's fine. But what kills you is the time it takes to go from where you're at to the next pickup. So you might have to drive 20 minutes to pick somebody up to drive them a mile and a half. So you might have an entire hour dedicated to one ride, and you made $4, right? And that's on the low side. That happens sometimes, and that's the one that's what averages you down. Sometimes you go back to back to back to back, and their system lines you up. It's actually pretty good at lining you up for back to back, and you can make maybe $30 an hour on the better end. But I averaged around $17 an hour for Lyft and that or for Uber, and that's not taking in consideration for wear and tear on the vehicle. It was an electric car, so I didn't have any fuel costs, but insurance costs and stuff like that. None of my rates went up. Nothing really happened as far as more expense goes, but it has to be factored in the cost. And I think once you factor that in, maybe it's more like $12 an hour, maybe $15 an hour when it's all said and done if you did it full time. But I want to hear from you before we end the show. If you've got any yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down on any of those services, got some experience being delivery, let me know after this next break. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer. In this last little segment, a couple of the other sites I mentioned that Fiverr is one of those, developer, designer, service, deal. But we're calling this gig economy the economy of freelancers. You could put your skill set up there, and they've got sites that are kind of built around certain niches, certain specialties. So let me give you a couple of them. These are probably the top 5 or 10 that you might recognize. One is Toptal, TOPTAL. The next one is Fiverr. People per hour is another one. Upwork is another one. Freelancer. Simply Hired. 99 Designs. The Creative Group. And Envato. So those are a couple ones. Like I said, I've used Freelancer, I've used Upwork, and I've used Fiverr
before and all with pretty good results. Let me give you a little bit of a warning here. And, you know, stimulus checks and free money brings out really terrible people. And they're trying to scam you out of your checks. They're trying to trick you. And so let me give you this warning. And this was actually on the FBI's website as a warning to the Treasury offered a Check My Stimulus webpage so that if you haven't received your stimulus, you can go to this page, enter your information, hit submit. It tells you what day your stimulus is going to. That's a very popular page. But if you take this, the Where Is My Stimulus, and put it just in a Google search, then you have to absolutely make sure that the Treasury's website comes up and not somebody else. So I've heard reports of an unscrupulous site being the first search result. So how do they do this? How do they become the search top search result? They pay to be the search one. It'll be an ad that's at the top, right? And so you click on it, and it's a complete mock-up of the Treasurer's website. You enter your information in there. You hit submit. It says error, but now they have, you just gave them all of your information. And if it's the Treasury website, you probably put your social security number in there, probably put the name and your address in there, right? Everything that a scammer needs to do something like taking out a credit card in your name. So if that happened to you, the steps to take are, first off, you have to lock your stuff down, because probably, I'm guessing, the first thing that they're going to do is try to issue cards in your name or do identity theft. So you can go to all three of the credit bureaus. You can do Equifax, you can do TransUnion, and the other one, I can't think of it, but Experian. You can go to all three of them, log into their website. If you have an account with them, use your account. If you don't have an account, just log in or create a new account. And you want to do this fast, because how this works is once they grab your information, it gets entered into a database that usually gets sold to someone else. The person that grabs your information usually isn't the same person that uses your information. It's usually turned around and sold off on the dark web. And so within 24 hours, your information is the most valuable. Every day that it exists, it gets less and less valuable. So usually they try to do something pretty quickly. But you usually have a nice window of time before it makes its way into the database, gets sold to somebody else, and somebody issues that first card. So take the time, register account with Experian, with TransUnion, and the other one, Equifax, and log in the account and click on the freeze my account, right? And that'll stop people from trying to, you know, if somebody tries to issue a card, they get declined because it's inaccessible. And thankfully, most credit cards will check one of those three in order to issue it. And then they're going to get declined if they were to try. So after you've frozen all of those accounts, now keep in mind that once they're frozen, you also cannot get a loan, either a house or a car or a credit card. It can't be checked when it's frozen, so you have to unfreeze it when you're ready to start using it. But give it a period of time of keep it frozen so that your card won't come back, it won't get into the database, and it'll get removed as a bad social. That's what you want to get off the radar as quick as possible. And then the second step is to get some kind of identity monitoring software. LifeLock came to mind first, but there's a ton of other ones out there. But have it pay attention just in case there is something that comes up, that at least you have some mitigation and that you're not really doing anything of service, because once you're locked down, they're going to be closed out. But if they are successful at something, if you're a subscriber of LifeLock, then their mitigation service is what you're after. They'll help you clean it up after the fact. So that's my warning of the day. Be very careful when you're following this, because the scammers know you're about to receive a check and they're going to try to get that information, get your bank account information, get your identity or get your credit, and just be really careful. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Have a great Easter. Have a great rest of your weekend. You've now listened to the Youngstown Computer Show, 570 WKBN.